Fred, what have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show. I hope you enjoy the show today. I don't know if it's going to be good or not. I'm not going to make any promises. I don't want to set expectations that I can't live up to. But I think it's going to be a show that at least I would like to listen to. Special guests on the show today. First off, we have an incredible short about, 8-minute interview that I did with J.R. Jim Ross. It was a part of the Heated Conversations podcast, but I wanted to share it with all the Brad Gilmore Show listeners. J.R. has a new book out, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. I started listening to it through Audible. I mean, awesome book. Enjoying it so far. He was a wealth of information on the full episode of Heated Conversations. You can go out of your way to listen to it on radio.com or on iTunes. And Booker and I really went through memory lane with him a lot. But I had a couple things I always wanted to talk to JR about, and you'll hear that. You know, JR and I shared a mutual acquaintance and also a mutual condition, which I've talked about, I feel like, on this show before. But if I haven't, you'll learn something about me too. So we're going to listen to JR first, and then immediately following JR, we're going to talk to Kyle Hubbard. Kyle Hubbard, mainstay of the Brad Gilmore Show. He has a new album out called All Good Things Come. They do, apparently. And we're going to talk about his album. We talk a lot about hip-hop and our diets. You know, he's 30 now. So when you get to that age of 30, you start talking about your diet. Now, I'm not 30, but he's 30. So we're talking about his diet, and then I felt compelled to talk about mine. So let's listen to my interview with J.R. Jim Ross, and then we're going to listen to Kyle Hubbard. And to plug away, Reality Wrestling every Sunday on Fight TV. That Fight TV app is free. $3.99. Go download it. And Back to the Future, the podcast, Season 4, still out, streaming. All episodes available right now at backtothefuturepod.com. With all that said, here is good old JR Jim Ross.
Well, you know, there's a couple things that I've always wanted to talk to JR about. But I want to say this. You know, Book, you thanked him earlier. And JR, I actually have something to thank you for as well. Before I ever was working with Book, it was about 6-7 years ago. I've actually also suffered 2 bouts of Bell's palsy, similar to you. And you were the only person I ever knew who had it. So I reached out to you on Twitter, and you sent me a tweet that actually helped me. You said, you know, stay positive, no cause, no cure, you know, talk to your family. And, you know, it really helped me get through that. So I wanted to thank you for that. And I wanted to ask you, you know, back when you originally got your first bout of Bell's palsy, like, you know, I'm sure there, you know, there's more known about it when I got it than when you. What was going through your mind when you first got it?
I had no idea what happened. I thought I had a stroke because the symptoms of a stroke, as far as your face drooping and, you know, all that stuff, is stroke-like, the Bell's palsy facial thing. So I didn't know what it was. I assumed that's what it was. And like I had a mild stroke type thing in my sleep. You know, hell, I didn't know. You start self-diagnosing, you know. Self-diagnosis is not a very good thing, but and then the first doctor I went to said I had Lyme's disease, and that was wrong, of course. And then I finally went to another neurologist, and he confirmed it was Bell's palsy, and I saw several neurologists subsequently since then. But hey, look, man, here's how I'll leave it this way: you can't let that or anything else define you. Just can't.
No, yeah, definitely. No, and I appreciate the words for it. And the other thing that I wanted to talk to you, I started reading your book, actually listening to it through audible.com. And, you know, we're here in Houston, and we do our shows in Texas City. And a guy who was always front row with his son Brody was Scott E. Williams. He came to every single one of our shows up until his untimely passing. And, you know, Scott and I would talk on the phone, and he would just, you know, be overjoyed when he was working on your book with you. And he would tell me all these things. He actually brought me some JR's beef jerky one time from one of his trips up there. And Scott was a great guy. You know, how was it like working with Scott? And then, you know, how was he? I don't want to bring it down too much, but how was it whenever you found out about his untimely passing?
Scott came highly recommended. Scott was recommended by Dave Meltzer, like the biggest recommendation I think maybe Meltzer could give somebody. Because knowing what Scott's particular areas of expertise were. There were many, but one of them certainly was Mid-South wrestling and a lot of the territories that I was in. So he had a very good understanding of chronologically of my run, so to speak. And one of my pet peeves for this book is accuracy, historical accuracy and my own accuracy, not rewriting history, but the real.
Yeah.
And so Scott was going to be my historian, researcher, you know, and so he would come to Oklahoma. I'd bring him up, put him in a hotel near my home, and we would start early in the morning and work till late at night, and he would interview me like I was giving a deposition, and it was chronologically through my career from day one. So we did that for hours on end for several days, you know, once or twice a month for, you know, for a long time. We spent a lot of time on this deal. So, and then, you know, then we'd had finally got all the tapes into transcripts, which is a massive deal. You wouldn't believe that deal. My God.
Yeah.
And then when I heard Scott had passed away, I said, it can't be my Scott Williams. It can't be not this Scott Williams. And it was, and I was shocked. I didn't know, you know, I was around him. Hey, look, he smoked too much, just like I used to. So I ain't going to, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, he wasn't overweight. He wasn't, seems to be short of breath. He didn't have any of those issues.
Yeah.
So I was totally shocked. And, man, I don't think I ever met a more learned, knowledgeable wrestling fan than Scott Williams. He was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, I think his email was something like, you know, like loaded glove at, you know, dingdong.com or something, you know.
And, you know, to even name his son after the, you know, Bruiser Brody, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loved the business. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, JR, about the book, you know, I started reading it. There's a story that, you know, when y'all read it, you know, it's an early story with your dad, something he asked you to do that, you know, I think is an impossible task, which is just a crazy story. I don't want to give it away, but people, when y'all hear it, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the other thing was Vince McMahon wrote the foreword to your book. How did you get Vince to do the foreword, and what kind of conversation was that like?
I sent him a text. and he answered me in about 5 minutes, said, honored to, and that's it. I gave his assistant the timeline. You don't tell a guy like him that's writing your forward, oh, it's got to be less than 120 words or whatever. Write whatever you want, as long or as short as you want it, whatever you choose. And he wrote I thought it was a really cool and thoughtful and real forward. Then Austin wrote the afterword. And then I got stuff from Mark Cuban and Coach Bob Stoops, The Rock, Billy Gibbons.
Wow.
A lot of guys I met and, you know, and worked with or buddied around with. So it's an interesting book. I think there's a lot of lessons in there. And I damn near didn't finish it after Jan got killed, and as I've talked about. And I'm really happy that I did. I'm glad I rediscovered my nuts, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I did the right thing. And I got to thank Scott for all his work. And of course, then Paul O'Brien, you know, and that wasn't easy. You know, Paul O'Brien had to work through Jan's death and Scott's death. And he's in Ireland and I'm in Oklahoma, for God's sake. So, but boy, it worked good. He had my voice. We talked and, you know, thank God for telephones and emails and text messaging.
Hey, man, and you
so
know,
it's been a great experience. I'm so thankful that I got it, I finished it, and that we finished it, and now that we're getting all this great feedback. The books at best places, Amazon is your best location for the audio book or the whatever. And then you know, you guys were talking about what was it? Owen, you got the audio book from where?
Audible.com. Yeah.
Audible.com. Mm-hmm. It's doing good, you know. I'm told it's doing. It's a top two or three selling book in Amazon right now. So it's doing really well, better probably than I deserve, but I'm really thankful, and I thank all your listeners and all you guys for supporting it. It's a fun project, and it's going to be a big win for the missus if it happens, and I think we're well on our way to it doing well.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Right now I'm joined by a very special guest who is in your earphones as well as mine. It's almost like I said that before. Y'all, welcome to the show, Mr. Kyle Hubbard. Kyle, what's going on, man?
I'm back. I'm good. What's going on, Brad?
Man, you know what? We do this every so often, and it's because every so often you decide to get enough courage to release an album.
Right,
and,
yeah, for
and
sure.
You have a new one, All Good Things Come.
Right.
That's the name of the album, right?
Yeah, I said right.
You said right, like right? Like you didn't know. I was confused. Now, hold on. So I'm going to start off hot. Hot take off the top. This wasn't the original name of the album, right?
That's accurate. The original name was Swan.
Okay, so explain this, because I remember you. So I'm on Twitter. I'm scrolling through my timeline, and I just see somebody repeat the same word multiple times. They say Swan, 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 Swan. And it was you.
Yes, that was me.
And so I was like, okay, obviously he's got something going on with the swan. I was assuming it was musical related. I didn't know if you just got into, what is it called, orthonology all of a sudden. I didn't know what you were
into. Surrounded by swans and just screaming out swan every time I saw a swan.
Swan, 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 swan. I didn't know what you were going for. So that was the original name of the album. And why was it Swan? Because, let's take another break here. Because hip-hop is still in a weird place, I think, right now. Like, people don't really know, like, you know, hip-hop, you know, I think it's holding on to its identity of the past and trying to embrace a new generation at the same time and having problems doing it. And for me, Swan, when you hear Swan, that doesn't sound like a hip-hop album. That sounds like a single off of Ariana Grande's mixtape.
Wow!
So
damn.
So not even
so
an album.
A fan of the name. You weren't.
No. I like the name. I'm just saying, like, as a okay. All good things come. Boom. You know, you're not that special. Yeah. Bang. Majestic Hotel. What's up, brother? Swan.
I mean, essentially, it just all good things came to me. And it kind
how
of
how many times that it came to you? Whoa! Hi-yo.
Hey yo!
Oh wait, so
but so I mean, like the album is about, like, essentially it's about finality, more or less, or closing the chapter. And in my case, it's like kind of letting go of my 20s and entering my 30s, kind of letting go of some of my youth is essentially what the album's about. So what I was trying to evoke with Swan was the phrase Swan songs, you know, but that to me was kind of like it's kind of too constricting of a name. And like it just followed that concept in my head. It followed that concept of finality to a further point than I actually wanted it to go. And I felt like all good things come. You could be all good things come to an end. All good things come to those who wait. All good things come to fruition. Like, it was more open-ended, but it was still within the same realm. And, and I just think it's definitely a better name. I think All Good Things Come is a much better name than Swan.
Yeah, because when I found out, like, it was Swan's song was what you were going for, like, I mean, I think instantly people are probably like, oh, okay, so this is his last album? Or what's going
right.
on?
Right. Yeah, which wasn't really the message I was trying to send. I was playing, like, the concept is, like, at the end. But it's not like the end of me making music. It's like I said, it's like the end of my youth. I mean, the concept worked with the name, but I just felt like the name Swan was kind of, it had other connotations that were out of my hands.
So
if that makes any sense.
No, I understand completely. And I guess so you're 30 now?
Yes. I'm like a month into my 30s.
How does it feel?
Terrible. Everything hurts. I mean, so far it's fine, but, like the other day, I don't have a great diet, you know?
Let's stop. What's your normal, like, okay, wake up. For me, can I tell you what my diet was this morning? I mean, this is my day of eating, and it's awful. You want to hear what it is?
Okay.
So I woke up, and this is so bad. And I don't want this to reflect on me as a person because this was like I swear this was an isolated incident, but this is my day diet today. I woke up, and I consumed two, like prepackaged, like buy them, like at the grocery store, cinnamon rolls, and two of them, and jeez. I drank it with a Rockstar Energy, not even a Red Bull.
Oh my god!
I know, I'm like way down on the total, and I'm not, this isn't my normal routine. So don't judge me for it. But that's how I started my day. And then I transitioned.
With a bank.
Yeah, I did. I started with a well-balanced breakfast. And then I transitioned into for lunch. Lunch was better. Lunch, I had like some pan-fried chicken dumplings and a vermicelli salad with lemongrass chicken, right? So that's a little bit better. And then when I got home, I was like, you know what? I want a little snack. And I happened to have some salsa that I made the previous night. So I ate some chips and salsa. And then for my dinner, I made a beef and noodle dish. So I had maybe like a water with it. And then at lunch, I had a limeade. So, I mean, it started off kind of awful. And I think it kind of slowly got there to where it was like a little better-ish thing. But I still feel like I'm going to pay for breakfast later on.
Well, you will. You will, because you have to. But it did sound like you course-corrected. At least you didn't go on like a shame spiral and just be like, I've already eaten cinnamon rolls. I'm just going to get fried chicken now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think the graduation of cinnamon rolls and Rockstar is like, I think for lunch you would have to have hot Cheeto Puffs, sour Skittles, and maybe like a Big Red or Big Blue, you know, soda. Ugh. I think that would be lunch. And then I think the dinner of that would be either hot, like a Hot Pocket maybe, or like maybe a microwavable dinner from Chili's. I'm thinking
I feel like I have diabetes now. Just hearing these foods listed just gave me diabetes.
Yeah, I feel like a strong close to that would definitely be like a microwavable Chili's dinner, maybe like Cajun chicken pasta with maybe a soft drink of some sort. I think that would be the capper for that, but that's not what I had. So let me get back to you. You have a terrible diet. That's how, I don't know how we got on that, but you have a terrible diet.
Well, I go through phases and I've had a phase of just kind of being a hedonist and eating whatever I wanted. And it weighed heavily on my soul on Sunday when I looked at myself in the mirror. So I've just been trying to eat better. You know what I mean? This is like, I'm trying to eat better right now until I feel better about myself.
I don't want to blow up your spot too much, but you told me you had a vegan mango kale smoothie previous to this recording.
Yeah, but you know what? I get these pretty often because they're a good like meal replacement. You know what I mean?
You get the protein added in it?
Not typically, because I think it's already geared towards that. You know, I could get the protein on top of the protein that's already included, but then I might be getting too much protein.
The first time I went to Smoothie King, they asked me if I wanted to make it a meal, and I was really confused. And I said, yeah, and I thought maybe like I get like a cookie and maybe some like crackers or something. Then they just hand me the drink, and I'm like, wait, I asked for the meal. They said, well, yeah, it's all in the drink. You should have, like, I'm not even lying. My face was so confused. I was so confused. But anyway, so, okay.
Wait. Before you go any further, does making it a meal just mean that they add the protein to it? Like, extra?
Yeah, that's all that means.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Okay.
And they give you, like, 8 grams of protein, and apparently that's, like, a meal, like a full-on meal replacement.
There you go. That's good to know.
So, yeah, there you go. Free game. Free game. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so you're a month into your 30s. You had your release show around the same time as your birthday, or was it on your birthday?
Well, no, it was like 2 weeks after.
Around. So yeah, this is all September. This is all September-ish. Right. And you did an awesome thing. I do want to give you some props. You donated, what is it, all the money, every single dime to the relief efforts for Hurricane Harvey?
All the money made for every single dime of pre-sales that were made up until the 18th of September when the album came out were donated to the Mayor's Fund. And I also donated 100% of the ticket sales from the release party to the Mayor's Fund as well.
Wow. I mean, that's definitely an awesome thing. You know, I think what I love about that is like every Houstonian seems like they're like, you know what? We're not just going to like not do anything this time. Everyone definitely stepped up. You know, more so than I remember for any other natural disaster that's come through these parts. I feel like everyone was like, oh, man, this one's really bad. We need to do stuff.
Yeah, I think Harvey was particularly unsettling, you know, especially because it lasted so long. So he's got, like, so many just, like, gut-wrenching images, like, all the time. You know what I mean? Like, that was, like, just days of just logging on to any social media and just being, like, scrolling, and like you just get hit with like 5 things in a row that were just like completely devastating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know what's great is like, you know, I mean, and just to go piggyback just off what you said, like you'd see so much stuff, and you know, everyone, whether it's you donating the stuff, whether it's Booker and I going out to LA, whether it's JJ Watt raising the $35 million, what, you know, whomever it is, like people are just like, everyone's pitching in. And you know, I think that the fact that we're not letting anyone just, you know, are waiting on anybody just to come through and fix all our problems for us. You know, I remember they said, you know, we're not going to recover for like 20 years. I think we're going to cut that time in half because, you know, this is definitely like everyone helping out. And I think it's a cool thing. And I think you should be, you should be patted on the back by several different people who aren't me. And, you know, and for what you did.
Well, I appreciate it. But like you said, I think it was kind of everybody's doing their part and everybody's doing what they can in different ways, you know? So yeah, I mean, I definitely appreciate that, but I'm such a small cog in a much bigger machine.
But you know, like you always hear that stuff and that normally it's like with elections, they say every vote counts. I think with this, like every dollar definitely does count. And I think
yeah.
You know, everything is really – I mean, that's why, like, J.J. Watt was like, no, I'm not giving it to – you know, I'm not just going to throw it out to the Red Cross or whatever. I want to make sure this goes into the city of Houston and helps as many people directly as I can. And
right,
you know,
right.
And what crappy karma for J.J. Watt to then then be out for the season for the second year in a row.
That's terrible. I don't really keep up with sports, but obviously that's a terrible thing for any young athlete to have to experience. And I mean, damn, yeah, he just was like this saint, you know, to so many people, and then, yeah, it's terrible, man.
So let's get back to your album. So 2012 was You're Not That Special. This was named a top 10 album in the city of Houston in all genres, correct?
Yeah, it was actually top three. It was number three in the Houston Chronicles.
Top three. Well, that's still in the top 10, right?
Yeah, it is, but then don't get smart with me. Emphasize the fact that it was the top three.
If you're not number one, you're in the top 10.
Okay. All right,
no, I'm kidding. No, top three. That's an awesome accomplishment. All genres of music. And then you took your hiatus. You went away. We didn't like rap anymore. We were sick of it. We moved to Arkansas.
Right.
Right. And we went to school. We found a lady. We kicked it with the family. Is that all right?
Yes, completely accurate.
And then we decided that we can't remain retired.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't leave rap alone. The game needs me.
Oh, man. Thank you for the J-line, by the way. Oh, man. That was a great one. And like Jay-Z, you retired and came back. But so you came back. I think Rip the Page was the song that you came back with. And then you dropped Majestic Hotel. This is all off the top of the dome, by the way. I'm actually kind of impressed with myself.
This is good. This is all no misinformation thus far.
No misinformation. You dropped Majestic Hotel. You had a label situation that didn't really work out. Right.
Right. Correct.
Didn't go the way that you planned it on going, or maybe you just didn't feel the support. We don't like that record label anymore, do we?
No, but I mean, honestly, I don't give a shit. Whatever.
Yeah. You know it's cool. They exist over where they exist. We don't pay attention to them.
Correct.
Was that a hard decision? Like you leave. Okay, so and you know I mean, we don't have to go into names, but you leave a record label that you joined to come back on. Does that make sense? So
right.
It's like you're like Jordan playing for the Wizards in 2003. You're like, I'm coming back on this new team with these people on my roster. We're gonna make something happen. And then it kind of came out. The album came out, and you didn't really feel the love. Was that a difficult thing to go through when you're kind of trying to make a comeback?
A little bit. I mean, I think it was difficult towards the end of the relationship. So the hardest parts of it were, A, convincing myself to do it in the first place because I'm such not a team player. And this whole experience only reaffirmed that. Like,
you're not a team player?
Not really. I mean, not when it's like, you know, like if I have something to promote, I really don't give a shit about what anybody else is doing. And I know every other rapper feels that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's just the way that it is. I have a limited time here. You know what I mean? So I'm in it for me. And I don't think that I was completely honest with myself about that. So I somehow convinced myself to do this thing in the first place. But it was a hard decision to come to. And then kind of just being like, the end of the shit was kind of difficult because I was like, well, if I leave this, whose blacklist am I going to end up on? And that's kind of what my concern was. And that was a difficult part was, you know, being concerned and stressed out about being like, this guy's not going to book me because I hurt this dude's feelings and all that kind of shit. But it all amounted to nothing. But, I mean, beyond that, it wasn't really that difficult of a situation. It was a frustrating situation, especially at certain situations. But I don't feel like, honestly, I don't feel like in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really move the needle of my narrative in any kind of significant way when it was all said and done. Like, I think I would have done what I did without the label with Majestic Hotel, I think everything would have worked out the same way. You know what I mean? There just would have been less headaches along the way, and maybe I wouldn't have got booked for X, Y, and Z. But I still would have got booked for A, B, and C. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand, but I just think that, you know, I think for some reason, you know, when we're doing stuff independently, like when it's your name, right, when it's not a group, when it's not a whatever, like you're Kyle Hubbard. And right. A lot of the times when you're like a solo artist or, you know, individual trying to make something happen, you say, man, what does every rapper say at one point in their life? I need a team.
Right, for sure.
And you feel like, okay, I'm, you're kind of always forever, you're eternally searching for this team and this group to be a part of, to feel like you got people who have your back and people who are going to push for you. You know, every rapper has his entourage. Everybody has got their team. They got their manager, their PR. And you thought, man, boom, I'm going to come back. I'm into a situation where I got a promo machine working for me. I'm going to have people riding for me. And then you kind of say, well, you know what? This is weird. I'm supposed to have all these people riding for me, but like, I'm just doing everything that I did before on my own.
And I'm just slapping somebody else's logo on it, essentially, is what it amounted to.
I'm giving somebody else credit for what I'm doing.
Right. And doing that in an attempt to bolster up the image of the entity. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, this is what a label's supposed to be doing, and we want to convey that the label's doing that. So I'm going to do it, but we're going to say that it was more you guys to kind of keep that image alive. Now, I will say, though, since I've left, they've had success in that area with artists outside of myself. But this is me speaking specifically on the Majestic Hotel release, which is my only experience with the label. You know,
yeah. This is definitely you, and this is about, this is not about anybody else. This is about your interactions with that particular label. So I mean,
right.
So now, but yeah, now they're doing better. You're doing better. New album out. But let's talk about Majestic Hotel for a little bit.
Sure.
It came out 2015. This was your big kind of return push, your return album. How do you feel that it was received? I mean, you had been gone, essentially not dropping a full-length project for 3 years. How do you feel like it was received?
I mean, really well. I mean, I think the thing about – so that was like my press high. Like, you know, I was getting press even like in a short, concentrated amount of time. That was the most press I've ever gotten once. And it was tied into the release of Majestic Hotel, but I think the real story was the comeback thing, you know what I'm saying? Now, I think Majestic Hotel was well-received. I think, you know, people liked the music and everything like that, but I do feel like it wasn't the story. The story was, I'm back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I mean, I'll say this. I mean, there's songs on Majestic Hotel that I wish had existed at a different time, because they're such good songs that I think that I wish the narrative was about the songs and not about the outside stuff. You know what I mean?
What songs are these?
I would say the song with Chase Hamlin is still one of, like, you know, one of the best put together songs I've ever made. You know what I mean? And I still feel like there's a lot of untapped potential for that song that, I don't know, I just feel like, you know, to me, and I'm super thankful for how it went, because it really helped me with bookings and stuff like that. But, you know, when I look at the headlines from that time period, it's all Kyle Hubbard back on track, blah, 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 blah. I wish those headlines were more like Houston hip-hop artist collaborates with, you know, longstanding pop psych musician to make this fucking crazy song that has never existed within the hip-hop realm in Houston ever. You know what I mean? That's a terrible headline, but you get my point.
It's a little long. It's a little wordy.
Yeah, a little wordy. I think they say not to do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, but that's just kind of like – that's just me being like, well, I'm really, really, really happy with this meal, but if you're going to force me to give you a critique, then they could have used a little bit more pepper. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, and I get that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, the headline or the story, the comeback story – well, no, you know what? I'll take that back. Before I even say it, I'll take it back, because I get what you're saying. But let me ask you this. When does an artist know it's time to – so you say you wish that record would have come out at a different time, meaning you thought it had more legs than it probably got. When do you
– yeah.
When do you, though, just – like, for me, I know I have songs in my email that I've worked on that are from, like, 2013, and I still haven't put them out. And I know that I'm going to finish them. I'm going to put them out there. I'm not going to give up on it. But when you have a released piece of work or a released song, Like, when can you decide that I'm giving up on this record? Even though I think it has more legs, I'm moving on to my next project.
Oh, man. Man, that's a really good question, because it's not really a realization that, like, you want to come to. I mean, you know it's going to happen. Like, it always happens. It's not a surprise. But I don't know, man. That's a really good question. I mean, you know, I mean, the headlines dry up, and then I don't know. I mean, well, you know, I don't have an answer, honestly.
Well, you know.
Just know.
Yeah, but do you, or do you feel pressured to start something new?
Well, you do. I mean, you do feel pressure. Like, I would definitely put pressure on myself to not have a huge window between releases this time. I was, like, if you look at, like, so as soon as I was gearing up to release the new album, like, my Facebook memory shit was all Majestic Hotel shit. Because it all happened, like, within, like, pretty much exactly 2 years of each other. You know what I mean? So I did put that pressure on myself to kind of move on. And I guess, I don't know, like, you know, a song becomes a year old and you know how great it is, but you really can't shop it around the same people. You know what I mean? It's just like, what are you going to do? Like, I guess you could invest in PR or something like that, but I don't know. I mean, you're not going to be relevant if you're not releasing music. And I'm definitely not an advocate for releasing a ton of music for the sake of releasing a ton of music. Yeah, okay, but you have to be.
That's what I was going to ask you, not to cut you off, but it's just like, I feel like that's where we're at now. Like, you have to constantly release music, and a body of work only lasts for a month or two. Like, so did you listen to Jay-Z's 444?
Of course.
Where do you, was it great to you? Was it good to you?
Yeah, I loved it. I love that album.
You love the album. Do you say it's one of his best?
A gun to my head, yeah. I mean, I would say probably top five.
Why would there have to be a gun to your head for you to answer that?
I don't know. I'm just trying to make it more exciting.
Yeah, so it's top five. I say probably it's top, it's maybe number four for me. You know, somewhere
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm off the top of my head, Blueprint, Reasonable Doubt, and probably American Gangster I like more.
Oh. So, see, we have a little bit different.
Maybe it is.
Blueprint, Reasonable Doubt, Black Album.
Oh, yeah, Black Album. I definitely like Black Album more.
But I think my number one is strong, and then my two through five just kind of cycle.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm the same way.
So anyway, it was a great piece of work. I feel like we talked about it heavily for its week of release, the following week, and then maybe the third week we talked about it, and then it kind of died down, and then he did that interview, so we talked about it for another week, and now it's like, I feel like it's not even a conversation anymore.
Yeah, no, it is insane how disposable music is. Even like epic, huge records like Jay-Z's new album, it's pretty crazy.
No, man, I mean, I understand 100%. It's just, it's so disposable. I mean, like I said, that's a classic album. I mean, and I know that term gets thrown around all the time, but it is. It's an instant classic. When that album came out, I listened to it night of. Because remember, it came out at like some random time. And I listened to it that night, like the whole way through. And I was just like, man, I love Jay-Z. Jay-Z used to be your favorite rapper, and then you like kind of like were like cold on Jay-Z.
Well, I just found very disconnected to the music that he started to make. Like, I guess I liked Watch the Thrones, but I was like, I don't really know what you're talking about, Jay-Z. A lot of it, and then Magna Carta, I was just like, Jay-Z, you and I don't even have the same concerns in life, you know.
We don't exist in the same reality.
Like, we have nothing to talk about. But the new album, though, it was hella relatable. Like, hella relatable. So, like, that was like the Jay-Z that I loved, you know. It was like a return to form in my eyes.
Was it kind of like you know, the 2017 Reasonable Doubt? I saw that comparison. So
I mean, I guess, but
as
no,
far as the vibe,
mean, as far as the vibe, I mean, I think, yeah, you can make that argument. But at the same time, I disagree because, I mean, 444 was like, it's like, it's almost like avant-garde. Like, it's like real, like, high-end, artsy kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like, French film hip-hop album.
A French film hip-hop album.
I mean, you know, it's like, it's real out of the box, but, like, in a really artful way. It's not like fucking Kanye West album, Yeezus. It's not like Yeezus, you know what I mean? It's like where that's completely out of the box, but it's not good. And it's just like, it's just coloring out of the lines for the
Yeah, for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, whereas like everything on the Jay-Z's new album, it all had like a lot of purpose and weight to it. You know what I mean?
What's the song on there for you? Like, what's your favorite song off that 444?
I mean, I think 444 is probably my favorite. But also the Story of OJ is like fucking brilliant.
Story of OJ is great. I like Family Feud.
Family Feud is great.
I like Bam, because Bam kind of reminds me of like, you know, allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is, you know, it kind of has that vibe to it.
Yeah, plus Damian Marley's hella dope too.
Yes. I don't know what he's talking about, to be honest with you. A rude you boy know, don't live in a
Jamaican
tenement yard.
Shit, dog.
You know, I don't live in a tenement yard. I don't know. I'm not a rude boy. No more so. I don't know what the hell he's talking about, but I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I literally don't know what that means. Too much watchy.
I like the whole album, though. I don't think there's any song I dislike on that album.
No. I like everyone. I mean, Smile's great. I like Marcy Me. Bam, like I said. And, you know, when you listen to his songs, and especially like Bam and stuff like that, or even I think it's Story of OJ, or maybe it's Kill Jay-Z, one of them, where he's doing the, because in the future somebody else could be playing football with your son.
Yeah.
It's just like the double, triple, quadruple entendres that he's able to pull off.
That's fucking Jay-Z in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one time he said triple entendre, don't even ask me how. I remember he said that in a song. And it, I mean, just his work, his level of wizardry with words is just phenomenal. Is it not? Is it not like, I mean, I feel like you have to put him number one.
I mean, you won't really get an argument from me on that. I mean, despite my period of, there's probably actually like two periods of Jay-Z's career where I don't like what he was doing.
Okay, so we don't like this recent run. We don't like Watch the Throne to Magna Carta.
Right.
What was the other time?
I would say like the Volume 1 through Dynasty. Like that's not my favorite Jay-Z.
You know, I would agree with that. I like most of Volume 2, but 1 and 3, except for Big Pimpin', you can have. And Dynasty was okay. But that wasn't even really supposed to be a Jay-Z album. It just kind of turned into one.
And I mean, every Jay-Z album has its bright spots. Like even his worst one has something to like about it. But that whole stretch of his career where I guess he was becoming he was doing what he had to do to be able to make shit like The Blueprint. You know what I mean?
Man, yeah. I mean, he's the GOAT. And I don't really know. I think, you know, and a lot of times people put M in that conversation. And I think Eminem is in the conversation of greatest of all time when you talk about the ability of rapping. But I think Jay-Z's number one, and I really don't think it's even close for number two.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I mean, nobody has a consistently well-rounded body of work like Jay-Z. Like, Eminem had a trilogy of classics, but, you know, that trip from point A to point terrible rapper was really fast. You know what I mean? Like, in the grand scheme of things. Like, I mean, Eminem's whole entire second half of his career is kind of trash.
Yeah, and I hate to say it. You know, I'm one of those people, though, who I actually like the Relapse album. I do. I don't like Encore and then anything else. I don't like Encore. I liked Relapse. I didn't like Recovery. I didn't like, I think, Marshall Mathers LP 2 was the next one.
Yeah, that one was by far the worst. I actually like Recovery, and I did not like Relapse.
Really? You like, okay, so we're switched. Wait, maybe I'm getting them. No, I like Relapse. Yeah, I like Relapse. I liked the Rihanna record on Recovery. I liked the Pink record. I think that was it.
It's a very glossy, like high end, very poppy rap album. But for what it is, I like it. I like that album because it was like a forward motion in his narrative. Like he was like an adult on that. And then on Marshall Mathers too, which I despise, and I only listened to like once.
Yeah,
like he reverted all the way back to the murder and rape shit. You know what I mean? It's like, dog, you're too old for this.
Yeah, yeah. That Marshall Mathers LP 2 was just such a major miss. I mean, it was such a major miss. I think he had that Rap God song, which was cool, like for bars.
Yeah, that was cool.
But like everything else, he just was so far off on.
Yeah, And I don't know, man. Like, yes, he's definitely one of the best. He's, like, technically amazing. But it's like, dog, you know, like for an example, 444 is kind of, like, I love the album. And I actually think what I'm about to say, it's a critique, but I think it adds to the album. But there's parts of it that are kind of sloppy rap-wise. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but like I said, that kind of goes back to the avant-garde aspect of it all. But I say that to say this, like, I would still jam that over anything like technically perfectly proficient that Eminem made, because the Jay-Z shit, even with some cosmetic flaws, still has way more soul. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 1,000%. And, you know, I think if we were like, you know what? I mean, people might think I'm crazy for this. I think there's if you go album for album, I think, you know, you're gonna say, okay, Blueprint or Marshall Mathers LP, and it's going to be close. You know, yeah. I mean, it's going to be, I mean, you could, when you talk about their best of their best, Eminem at the best of his best, you know, was right there. But I think it's just, he's, you know, struck out so many times since.
For sure.
If his career ended at Eminem's show, I think that this conversation would be different. I think we'd say J1, M right there, number two, but at his neck. You know, if he put out more stuff, you know, he'd be number one, you know. But I think that Jay's my number one. And if you agree at Jay number one, and let's say, who would you actually put, like, seriously thinking about it, who would be your number two?
Man, like, so, like, a legitimate, like, taking in the full scope of everything they've done.
Full scope of everything.
Man, that's, you know, that's a hard question, because Jay-Z really is number one by a significant margin.
I know. I mean, it's kind of like when you have, like, the greatest basketball player conversation, and you just say, okay, we're going to take Michael out. Take MJ out. Okay, who's the greatest? So we can almost do that. But if Jay-Z's number one, who's number two? Like, the legit heir to the throne.
See, this is just the best answer I can give with a short amount of time. And I already know there's some caveats to it that might make this illegitimate. But Outkast, I know that's two people, but as far as bodies of work and quality of the work throughout, I think Outkast is up there. I mean, like I said, Eminem could have, but, you know,
I think
he's
still
50-50.
M's still there. Like, he's still in the conversation for greatest rapper ever. Yeah.
No doubt, because those first three albums are fucking amazing.
Yeah, they're crazy. Just the way he puts words together. But I like Outkast. That's something I would never say, because I'd never think to say it. But I think Andre 3000 has a fantastic run at, you know, a top five of all time.
For sure. And the Outkast's albums are just, like, they're so well. Man, Nas, I mean.
Nas is not on my list. Nas isn't anywhere close for me. For me.
Sacrilege, bro.
Nas isn't even in top 20 for me.
Top 20?
He's
Nas
even,
is not top 20?
No. If I want to go to sleep, I'll put on a Nas album.
Do you like J. Cole?
I do like J. Cole. Weird. I do. Weird, I know. Weird. But I think
you know who's a rapper that I think could potentially, well, I don't think so, because I think his time's already come and gone, but I think Big Crit is amazing.
Big Crit is amazing, and I hear he's got a new double album coming out soon.
Yeah, I'm super excited for it. And for rap albums, really. You know
yeah,
I mean?
But you know, like, I think a legitimate critique of Big Crit is, and you know what, and I really do believe it, and it's a little harsh, but I really do think Big Crit's a poor man's Pimp C. I've always kind of thought that, in a way.
I could see that, but I don't know. I'm not going to say it, but
I really
enjoy Crit's music.
Yeah, don't say that unless you want to have to go back to Arkansas permanently.
Right, no, I think that Crit has his lyricism is really next level. I really think it is.
So far we have Jay-Z, we have Outkast, we have maybe Eminem, we have Nas.
Nas, yeah. But I mean, again, Nas is like, there's so
Nas with one good album, like, Nas?
He's got more than one good album.
What I mean, okay, Illmatic, and what else?
Illmatic, Stillmatic.
Oh, Stillmatic. Get over yourself.
Hip Hop Is Dead is pretty all right.
It's
there is
pretty
the one
all
song
right.
where he there's that one song where he raps in that like 1920s detective voice the whole time, which is like, goddamn, nobody was like, hey, this is a really bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. No one thought to look out for Nas. And then what you like the Untitled album?
What's that?
You like the Untitled album?
See, at that point was like I was just not really checking for Nas anymore. Like not a knock against his music. I was just like, I'll get to this when I get to it, and it's been like 10 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and to me, Nas, Stillmatic, I think is barely passable as a good album. If you
it didn't really age well. I'll give you that.
No, it doesn't age well at all. And neither does the song Ether. Like, let's be honest. I've had this conversation a thousand times, but Ether is an awful song. It's awful in all aspects. It gets no points anywhere, in my opinion.
It's so perplexing that that was the beat that he chose for that song.
It's the worst beat maybe of all time.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
As far as notable songs that have some, you know, cultural significance, that's got to be the worst beat of any of those songs.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's an argument to be made for that. But
so you got Nas.
It was
a moment.
It was a moment.
But like it's, you know, Takeover. He kills him with one verse. I'm not gonna get in that conversation.
Yeah.
So we have Jay-Z, we have Outkast, we have maybe Eminem, we have Nas. Who else you got? Give me one more name.
One more?
Yes, one more.
Oh shit, dude!
I don't know why you put Nas in anything. I don't know why you'd put Nas in your list, but just go ahead.
I put Nas on my list probably because of our generational gap. You know, you just don't get it, okay? Because you're a kid.
I don't get it.
You don't get Nas, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just being a bitter old head. Probably not Nas, right? I don't know, man.
Well, Lil Yachty's in your top five or no?
No, definitely not. Drake's in my top five.
You know what though? I mean, if that was a pick. When we're talking about overall encompassing musicians in the history of the game, I mean, Drake is a safe choice, honestly.
Yeah.
Drake's a safer choice than Nas.
That's actually true. Like, I don't think that I would ever be like, yeah, Drake's in my top five. But when, like, I don't know, when my kids are like, yeah, Drake was one of the best rappers ever, I'll be like, yeah, you got a point.
Yeah, you got a point. There's an argument.
To you guys, yeah, I get that.
Wait, is Kanye in your top or no?
Man, I keep avoiding putting him in the top five. It's okay.
Because you just dislike him as a person?
Not even that. I give a shit what Kanye does in his real life. I think he can be a bozo from shit affects the way that I jam someone's music. If he's not, like, beating somebody up, like a girl, or doing something crazy, fucking reprehensible, I don't care. You know what I mean? So, I just don't think he's that great of a rapper. I really don't. I think he has moments of brilliance, but I can't listen to a Kanye album, and this has been the truth since College Dropout, and being like, this is really tight. This beat is amazing. Cool.
So you couldn't listen to anything since College Dropout. You listen to it, you say, this beat's amazing, but what?
But I'm just, like, listening to it, I'm like, dude, how much better would Jay-Z sound on this? Sound on this?
Yeah.
Like, Kanye's great. Like, he's, like, College Dropout, Graduation, they're all fucking, like, stellar albums, but I don't know. Just not my top five. I can't give it. I just don't think he's a top five rapper.
So who else do you, I mean, are you a, do you want to go with one of the classics? Do you want to go with a Biggie or a Pac or what?
No, because I was too young for them. Like, you know, I respect what they did and everything, but their impact on me personally is nothing like the impact Jay-Z had on me.
Well, then who is your in your top, Kyle Hubbard? I mean, come on, man.
I don't even know five rappers. This is crazy.
So you got once again, you got Hov, Outkast. Are we going to say Eminem?
Okay, look, I'm just going to break down. This is my top five, and I'm going to take out the statistical shit as well.
Okay.
I'm just going to make this a straight top five. So Jay-Z, Outkast, Atmosphere, Brother Ali, and probably.
And what was the last one?
Fonte from Little Brother. But Fonte only has one solo album, so I'd have to say Fonte, and then in parentheses, Little Brother.
Now you're a big Atmosphere fan.
I love that.
Slug and all, and that's his name, right? The rapper's name is Slug.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, I think they're cool. They have a song, I think it's called Don't Forget. That's like my favorite song they have.
I'm not familiar with that.
You're not familiar with Don't Forget?
Sing it for me.
It was like as old as we get, we don't forget, we won't forget. You don't remember that one? It was still No, he had a really dope rhyme, though. He said, it was still dark when Mark arrived, maybe 6:45 in the morning time. His aunt was a flight attendant, and she'd leave town with a Cadillac unattended. So we used to get tempted, that intense tendency to tend to what we wasn't meant to. No?
Ooh.
No?
No.
How do you not know this song? How do you not know this song?
I mean, dog, you got to understand, even people I'm a huge fan of, like, I don't think there's any back of my hand, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know. Are you sure that was Slug? Because content-wise, it sounded like Slug, but the rhyme structure did not sound very sluggish.
Is there another Atmosphere rapper?
Well, their first album, which I don't listen to that much, had at least one other rapper on there, maybe two.
This was just one guy.
Well, Brad, I don't know. Okay, you know, maybe it's a song that I was going through a Kanye phase, so I wasn't jamming Atmosphere when
it's okay. You were talking about bleached assholes. I can't, you know, it's fine. That was what you were into.
That's definitely not my era, Kanye. Okay?
So let's get in. I mean, I don't even want to get off in it. I mean, the music by far. Let's say if you agree with this, the music like 2014 to 2017, that kind of 3-4 year period. The music has devolved kind of rapidly, has it not?
Yeah, I would say,
overall,
it's pretty bad right now. Yeah, I mean, there's always bad rappers that are popular, but it seems pretty like who's coming up right now that's like the anti that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's always like 9 out of the 10 rappers that are popping at any given time are terrible, but there's always that one that's like super sick.
What's my guy's name who's signed to Rockefeller or Rock Nation? Vic Mensa.
I'm not familiar with him. Is he good?
He totes the line. He's got that new flavor, but he's got some content there.
Okay. Well,
he's not going to bar you to death, but he's good.
Is he the new J. Cole?
No, I think J. Cole's still currently the J. Cole.
Well, is this dude like Jay-Z's like his new Robin? You know what I'm saying?
This is his new pet project. Yes.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say. Now, you're not a J. Cole guy, are you?
I don't feel strongly about J. Cole either way. Like, I mean, he definitely has some stuff that I like. I really hate when people are just like, oh, he's so like he's mind blowing. Like, he's the greatest lyricist of all time. Like, dog, no, he's not.
No, he's definitely nowhere. I don't think I would never make the argument that he's near the top of the list as far as lyricism goes. I think, though, the way that I think this is J. Cole's appeal, is J. Cole has that appeal of he's not, you know, to be honest with you, sometimes Kendrick Lamar turns me off by the overdoing it. It's almost, you know, in the same way Eminem sometimes does, where it's just too much. It's so dense, it's so robust that you're like, brother, you're doing too much. You're on a different level than all of us. You got to bring it down here so we can feel your vibe. And I think J. Cole has the content of a Kendrick, but he's like Cliff Notes. He puts it in layman's terms.
Brilliant. That is brilliant. Yes. Wow. That is such a great way to describe J. Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of why some people get thrown off by him, because he uses simple rhyme structures and they're not like these crazy multisyllabic, you know, rhyme patterns. But they're simple, but they're content heavy, I still think.
But see, yeah, and that's fine. Like, you know, like I'm like the last person to get super caught up on rhyme schemes and shit like that. But I mean, I think even his content, like while it is good content, I still think it's very like, it's like surface level deep, if that makes sense. And not all the time, but I think that's kind of his bread and butter.
You know, I could see that. He's going to be the introductory course. He's not going to be you're not majoring in him.
Right. And it's okay, yeah. And a really good example of this and an example of that would be like, you know, Drake, he does the singing and he does the rapping about the relationships and his flaws and all that kind of stuff. And he's really good at it, and he can get really deep with it too, but he is still kind of, to steal your term, the Cliff Note versions of Fonte, really. You know what I'm saying? Like, the shit that Fonte says is like, it's not filtered to be like, oh, we gotta, is my way of saying this top 40 friendly? Like, Fonte will just straight up say the shit that Drake can't say, but Drake beats around the bush, you know what I'm saying? Where Fonte is throws the bush in your face. And there's got to be an equivalent to that with J. Cole. You know what I'm saying? I just can't think of who it is off the top of my head.
What a time to be alive. Well, the album is called All Good Things Come. What is the yes. What is your favorite track on this project?
The last one, To an End. Yeah,
now, To an End is actually my second favorite on the album.
What's your first favorite?
You want to guess?
Yeah, I'll guess. Is it Last Bow?
Last Bow isn't my second favorite, but it's up there. It's top five. My favorite one is Point of Life.
Okay, good.
I thought that was a really cool way. Yeah, I thought it was a cool way, and I guess because I know your story, probably, you know, I mean, I know you, so I know kind of what you're, you know, I have more context in the things that you're talking about, and so that one, like, kind of hit home for me.
Yeah. I mean, that was a single, so, you know, I remember the first time I rehearsed that song, I was with Full Metal and DJ Discipline, and, like, we had to start over, like three or four different times because we just all started laughing so much at the lyrics. And that's when I was just like, you know what? I've never done something like this. I've never done something so like on the face comical. And I just felt like it worked. And I'm glad that's your favorite song. I like that song a lot. It's one of my favorites to perform.
And speaking of on the face, I wanted to ask you about this album cover. Cause yes. I'm going to be honest. The Majestic Hotel, I understood. Right? Yeah. I got the concept. Uh-huh. I'm not so sure I grasp this concept.
Okay,
Explain to me. So the name of the album is All Good Things Come. It's available on Bandcamp and any streaming service right now, right? You can get it
anywhere.
I was listening to it on Apple Music. I think it's on Tidal, Spotify, that whole nine yards.
All of them.
But the cover is a illustration of you with hair, by the way. Glasses. Your facial hair. But the bottom half of your mouth and your jaw is melted away and the bone is exposed.
Right.
I don't get it. Tell me.
Okay. All good things come. All good things come to an end. The album is about me leaving my youth behind for what's ahead the rest of my life. So it's just like, it's just a really dramatic representation that youth is fleeting, so much to the point that I'm aging to the point that I'm just becoming bone.
I mean, 30's not that bad, is it?
No. It's not that bad. It's worse.
It's worse, damn it. I get it. I get it now. I get it.
Yeah, it's just like the end just coming up. And I mean, honestly, I think it's just a really fucking tight illustration, too.
I think, you know, it looks great. It looks great. So my final question for Kyle Hubbard on this edition of the Brad Gilmore Show is this. My question for Kyle Hubbard is...
Shoot.
And I want a serious answer.
Let's see.
If a record company came to you, say, Kyle, we're signing you. We're signing you right now. We're going to give you $5 million signing bonus right now.
Yeah.
Right?
All right.
But your task, you have to pick one rapper in Houston, and you have to do an incredible Ether-style diss track to him. Who would you like to diss in Houston?
Brad Gilmore.
Ah, yes. Okay, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. Well, Kyle Hubbard, the name of the album is All Good Things Come. He is going to be – you can find him. When's your next show?
My next show is November 17th at Warehouse Live in the Green Room with the Nerdcore legend, the Nerdcore king, Mr. Mega Ran will be in.
Yes.
Performing as well.
A wrestling fan during Survivor Series weekend.
That's right.
Well, real quick, how are you thinking? How are you feeling about wrestling lately?
I mean, parts of it I love and parts of it I hate. I hate gender. I love the Shield reunion. I love Braun, even though I feel like they just kind of fed him to Lesnar. But I like Lesnar. I'm a Lesnar fan. I feel good about it. I hate that the SmackDown. Okay, I'm gonna keep this short. I hate that the SmackDown roster is so stacked. But everybody's paired up with the person they should not be paired up with. So
like,
it makes
like
a
AJ
jealous.
and what's his name? Corbin?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I get if you want to hold off on Shinsuke and AJ, but goddamn, put them in the same, like, vicinity. Kevin Owens and Shane is fine, but I definitely want to see Kevin Owens. Why is the United States Championship have all the big names competing for it, and the WWE title is fucking gender, and no offense, Randy Orton, but you're kind of boring. Why is that happening?
But Shinsuke, right, Shinsuke's in it now. And to be honest with you, Shinsuke hasn't impressed me at a WWE champion level.
To that extent. Has Cinder?
No, not at all.
So who would you put the belt on?
AJ Styles.
Yeah, duh, right?
Or Kevin Owens.
Why the fuck was it Kevin Owens and AJ Styles not feuding for the main title? Why were they feuding for the United States Championship? I don't get it.
But you know what? I really didn't like their chemistry. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, none of those matches were great. None of those matches were great. SummerSlam was okay, but the whole Shane aspect kind of... Yeah, those matches should have been crazy. What the hell is going on?
I don't know. But you know what? You're going to hate me for saying this. I think Roman Reigns is like my favorite right now.
I mean, I don't dislike Roman Reigns.
I'm a fan.
I mean, I don't love Roman Reigns, but I don't dislike him.
If the main event of WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans was Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title, would you be disappointed?
Probably.
If the number two title, the WWE title, if it was AJ Shinsuke?
If they did that, they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Okay. Well, Kyle Hubbard, so you got a show, Survivor Series weekend. I'm sure we're going to be seeing much more of you. All Good Things Come is available everywhere. If you want physical copies, I believe they're limited available at kylehubbard.bandcamp.com.
Yes, sir, but there's not many left. So if you want one, get them soon.
Get them soon. Well, Kyle, I hope that when I see you November the 17th at Warehouse Live in the Green Room, I hope you're drinking a vegan mango kale smoothie.
I will. That's all I do. That's all I do, son.
Kyle Hubbard, follow him on Twitter, by the way, at Kyle Hubbard HTX, and Kyle Hubbard everywhere else. You can find him easy. Just type in his name. He's like one of the only ones. Kyle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?